Welcome, listeners, to another episode of 10 Minutes of Truth with your host, Sean A. Barksdale. Today, we're delving into the world of automobile purchases, services, and preventative maintenance. Joining us is a special guest, Mark Dalton from Terry Auto Softballs in Virginia and the Terry Auto Group in Lynchburg, Virginia. Mark's commitment to the community and his extensive knowledge of the automobile industry makes him the perfect guide for today's discussion. We're thrilled to have him on board to share invaluable insights into choosing the right vehicle, navigating dealership relationships, and mastering the intricacies of automobile finance. But that's not all. Mark's expertise extends to the crucial topic of preventative maintenance, ensuring your investment stays protected and your journey on the road remains smooth. So buckle up, folks, as we embark on this enlightening ride with Mark Dalton. Let's jump right in.
You can find us on all major podcast platforms. 10 Minutes of Truth with Sean A. Barksdale.
Hello, everyone. This is Sean A. Barksdale of the 10 Minutes of Truth podcast. We have an exciting guest here today. We have a Mr. Mark Dalton, General Manager, of course, of the Terry's Auto Group and VW Subaru in Lynchburg, Virginia. How you doing?
Doing great. How are you, Sean?
Man, I am great, man. Good. Great to have you here again.
Thanks for having me.
Again, absolutely. Before we get into the meat and potatoes of this episode, I want to dispel something, first of all. All my life growing up, of course, you know, car salesmen and dealerships, y'all get a bad rep.
And it's earned rep.
I'm glad you said that. But however, the reason that I'm talking about this, everyone, is because I can dispel that with you guys here at Terry's Auto Group, man, because we know the back and forth we had to do, some, you know, appointments we had to shift back. And this man came all the way from Lynchburg to give us this valuable and important information. So thank you once again.
Thank you,
Bert. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. So this is our second round. If y'all remember last year, about a year ago, we did a segment where we brought the guys in from the group home, gave out some great information. We want to piggyback off of that and dig in just a little bit deeper for our audience. Briefly, let the audience know a little bit about yourself. How long have you been in car dealership?
Well, so, I guess I've been with this company for 32 years now.
Wow.
And prior to that, I when I graduated from high school, I was a we were mechanics back then. I think I mentioned that before one time.
But, not technicians.
Yeah, not technicians. They're technicians today, right?
Correct.
So we'll
correct.
Explain some of that later.
Correct. Yes.
But I was a mechanic and worked at a little service station in high school. Did light mechanical work, and I went to Magic City Ford in Roanoke and started there as a mechanic, and did that for about 4 years, and loved the car business, but I knew that I didn't want to do that forever. I had this, I was intrigued with sales and the whole dealership environment, so I started selling there, and that's a story in itself, and I loved it. I love having the mechanical background gave me a ton of advantage when I would talk to a customer about the car, because maybe at times I even went a little too deep with them, telling them things about the horsepower, the way that engine's designed, and maybe they didn't care about that, but many did.
Right.
And so I sold, and then when I came to work for this company in 1992, I was a wholesaler. And basically what that evolved in was, or what was involved there, I had a rollback. I would get in my truck in the mornings, I would take off, and I would go from dealership to dealership. And cars that they had traded for the day before, I would buy some of those cars. And for example, I'd buy a Honda at a Toyota store. And I would take that Honda to the Honda store and sell it. And I would make a small profit, and that's how I made a living. And, and I did that for 4 years and learned a lot. And then Mr. Terry came to me one day and said, Mark said, I'm going to make a change. He said, I'm gonna take you off the road as a wholesaler. And he said, I'm going to make you general manager. Well,
that's a big leap.
That was a big leap. In fact, I laugh about it to this day, because at the time I thought, I was qualified. Looking back on it, to be honest, I wasn't qualified to be a general manager.
Right.
I didn't have the experience. There's a lot of steps that I skipped in there.
Right.
I had to learn the hard way.
Right.
One of those lessons, and I never will forget, I would call him at nighttime on the way home tell him that, you're not gonna believe this salesperson did this, or this salesperson said that, or whatever. And finally, he let me go on for a while, and one day he stopped me. He said, Mark, he said, you know what you're doing wrong? And I said, what's that? He said, you're demanding respect. He said, you need to earn respect.
Wow.
And I don't know that I bought into it when he said it, because I was pushing back and didn't accept that, but it didn't take long for me to try it his way.
Oh.
And he was exactly right. It was one of the best lessons I ever learned. So I started earning the people's respect, and that didn't take me too long. And from that day forward, I've had no trouble doing that, because I lead by example.
Hmm.
I don't ask anybody to do anything, whether it's cleaning a car or working on a car, that
Absolutely.
I won't do myself. Now, don't
right.
get me wrong, I don't go out there and pull a transmission out or anything
right.
like that, but I'll get up and under one and look at it and give an opinion and that type of thing in a heartbeat. So I started earning respect, and the rest is history, but it's been a great experience. Our dealership was just a Volkswagen Subaru store originally. We were always very good, I guess you would say, with used cars. We had to be, because Volkswagen Subaru was not a big selling brands, and so we were good with used cars. And then fast forward, maybe about 12 or 13 years ago, we opened an extra lot called the Terry Clearance Center in Lynchburg, and that's where we sold a little more budget-friendly car, and then we opened another store in Lynchburg, and so then we were up to three stores, and then most recently, I guess 5 years ago now, we opened this store here in South Boston, which is
nice.
Has been fantastic. I love South Boston.
Nice.
And I say that, I own more property here in South Boston in Halifax County than
in
Lynchburg.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, I love it.
Beautiful, man. Yeah. Thank you for bringing us into your world,
yeah.
which will actually segue us right into this first episode and first question, because you talked about the relationship you had with Mr. Terry.
Yeah.
And that teaching model. So let's start off with the importance of establishing trust with the dealership.
Right.
I know Terry's Auto Group used to focus mainly on used vehicles, as you were just saying. Y'all transitioned to newer vehicles. Let's start with how the first-time buyer, let's say a teenager, Mark, should approach buying a used vehicle. What should they do way before they get to the lot?
Well, I think we all have dreams, and you know, we see these fancy cars riding up and down the road,
right.
and there's nothing wrong with dreaming, but somebody has to be real with us, and so we have to come in with expectations that are realistic,
yep.
you know, and a first-time buyer coming in to maybe buy a $25,000 car, maybe that's not realistic, and somebody needs to help us with that. And if that's not someone in the family, then we would like to be able to establish trust with, whether it's a first-time buyer or a seasoned buyer, we'd like right. to establish trust with that person to help them and guide them and say, okay, let's look at our budget, you know, let's look at income, let's look at your monthly expenses, and help them back into maybe
right.
what would be an affordable car
right.
for them. So
right.
There's no sense in us going out there and showing this first-time buyer a $25,000 car, you know, if at the end of the day they've got $600 or $700 worth of additional money's left over.
Right.
Because right. there's living expenses too.
Absolutely.
You know? So,
and maintenance, what we'll talk about.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. With that said, because we're talking about relationships, right? 9 out of 10 new buyers, teenagers, they need a cosigner. That's what you talked about.
They sure do.
That relationship.
They do.
So, first of all, explain to our audience what a cosigner is.
So, a cosigner is basically someone that's telling the bank or willing to commit to the bank that if I'm going to make this up, and little Johnny is in buying his first car, and he has no credit. He has a job, a stable job, but doesn't have any history to be able to show the bank that, yeah, I can pay for this. But maybe it's mom and dad, maybe it's grandma and granddad, maybe it's aunt, uncle, whatever the case may be. Doesn't have to be a family member. It just has to be someone that has a relationship with that person and is has the credit worthiness that the bank can look at and say, okay, if Johnny doesn't pay for the car, then Uncle Joe's going to pay for this car. And Uncle Joe is committing that I'm going to stand behind this. So the cosigner is basically just a second guarantor. And he's just as responsible to make sure the bank gets their money as Johnny is. He has the same liability. But, you know, obviously, most scenarios when a cosigner is willing to do that, they know that the person they're signing with is
right.
They've got some they've got a relationship.
Understanding,
whether
right?
It's
exactly.
Family or what. So.
Right. With that being said, you're a father, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, I am too. So let's paint a scenario.
Yeah.
Let's say we have a young man or female failing out of school. Halfway listens to the mother, 17 years old, working on their third job. How likely are you to sign for that individual?
You know, it's, we were just talking just a few minutes ago
right.
about this very situation. Fortunately, my son, I would sign for him for anything that he came to me.
Absolutely.
And asked because he's proven that to
right.
me. But it would have to be, and all co-signers need to keep this in mind, it would have to be somebody that they have that trust in that relationship with to know that they are going to carry their way to this thing, because the last thing that co-signer wants is the bank calling them saying, hey, this payment's behind by 30, 60, 90 days, and I'm calling you because I need payment. Nobody wants to get that phone call. So. It needs to be someone that they really trust that's gonna hold. And, hey, and life happens, you know.
Right.
An accident happens and they can't right. work or something such as that. Those types of things are,
right.
are always out there. But with just normal circumstances, they need to understand that this person is capable. They're buying a car that they can afford, you know. I see that many a times that... it's on the outer limits of what maybe this person can pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And that cosigner needs to maybe coach them and say, hey, maybe we need to look at a little less expensive car.
Right.
That right. gives you a little more cushion.
Right, right, you know? Absolutely. And I definitely want children and parents to understand what you just heard, because there has to be an honor system and a trust factor there, right, when cosigning. A lot of times as parents, I know for myself, we reward bad behavior sometimes,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And what that can do is that can get us in a tricky situation, mm-hmm. because we know for our youth, you know, our children, first-time buyers, this is one of the biggest purchases you're going to make starting off.
Right.
And you have to have a sense of responsibility.
That's correct.
Moving into. So that's dialing important.
I got a quick little story
yeah,
for you, Sean,
please.
While we're on that.
Yep.
And this doesn't relate to credit or cosigner,
yep.
but my son, his first vehicle, my wife and I were fortunate to be able to provide him with a nice Toyota truck. I'll never forget it. It was Toyota Tacoma, Toyota Tundra truck. And, you know, he didn't have to pay for any portion of this. And my wife and I sat down one night and I said, hey, you know, this is a really nice truck to be providing. And my wife said, you know, I think you used the term skin in the game. He needs some skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at her like, what are you thinking about? What are you talking about? And she said, I think he needs to pay for his insurance and his gas. I said, well, I totally agree with the gas. I never thought about the insurance. Well, insurance for a young person can be very expensive.
That's something we're going to get into.
Very expensive.
Trust me.
Well, his insurance, I don't mind telling you, his insurance payment for 1 year was $1,500.
Yeah.
And for a 16-year-old to come up with $1,500.
Yep.
And he had worked and saved his money, and he had it. And I never will forget watching him write that check for $1,500. Now, as a parent, we want to insulate them from that. We want to provide all
right.
the things that we can.
Exactly.
So I'm sitting here thinking, it made me nervous, and you know, my wife was fine with it, but I was like, oh, maybe I can just give him this first one.
Right.
But she made me stick to it, and she said, no, he needs to pay for this.
Mm.
And so he wrote that check. Well, he didn't have his driver's license for about 1 month. And one night he had gone to mow a friend of ours' grass, and his mom had dinner on the table. He was running late, and he got pulled over for speeding.
Mm.
And the cop came up and said, first time you ever been pulled over? He said, yes, sir. And he was nervous, as you can imagine. And the cop did something I really admire him for, because he said, well, he said, I have a rule. He said, first time someone gets pulled over, he said, I feel like the parents can handle more than I can by writing you a ticket. He said, so my deal is I call your parents.
Right.
Well, it scared us to death. We get this phone call from this police officer, and he says, pulled him over for speeding. He's been very polite, very respectful. He said, but I'm not gonna write him a ticket, just a warning, but my deal is I call you. So he gets home, my wife's crying, I'm crying, my son was crying.
Right.
But it was the best lesson
correct
that's ever been taught, because from that day forward, if he was following us somewhere, he barely run the speed limit. He wouldn't even keep up with us.
Right.
And so anyway, the point of that is, If a parent is providing the car, if they're fortunate enough to be in a financial situation where they can just provide that, and Johnny doesn't have to pay for it, put some skin in the game, make him or her be responsible in some other way, whether it's insurance and their gas. You know, they might think twice about how far they're driving if they're having to put the gas in that vehicle, and rather than just giving them all of it. So it was a big lesson. So.
This is a great interview so far, because I'm going to tell you why. Great interviewer and a great interviewee. Mm-hmm. The thing is that was my next question, though.
Okay.
The story you just told.
Okay.
And this is the question first, guys. I was going to say, now we have a young man or woman that is responsible.
Yeah.
All right. Has been on a job maybe a year or so. Walk us through the process and education you get that first time. You just gave us the education, though.
Right.
Even from the police officer. That was education.
Yeah.
Your wife and having a helper, a mate, because you wanted to go another round.
Yeah.
You know, as the father.
And I'd probably be paying for it to the
You feel what I'm saying? So I hope that everyone caught that lesson, because the way I framed it, I know for myself, I have an older daughter, very responsible, same way I have two younger kids. They get away with everything,
mm-hmm.
right? And so their mother has to be a lot more stern
right.
than me in a lot of regards. But
not every family has that.
You can't. You know, you don't, and a lot of times you can't. So I really respect your wife saying that.
Mm-hmm.
And that taught him a great lesson. That was education,
yes,
man. So thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for that. Moving along, want to still talk about the value of building relationships, right?
Yeah.
With a dealership for future transactions and services, right? So I know that Terry's Auto Group has a plethora of services. First of all, tell us about the young men and women that you work with at Terry's Auto.
I am so fortunate, Sean. And I'll try not to get emotional when I talk about these people,
right.
but currently we have 107 employees.
Wow.
And many of these employees have worked with me. By the way, I don't say for me. Nobody
right.
works for me.
Right.
They work with me.
Right.
And
that's that lesson you got from Mr. Terry.
Yes, it is.
Yes, sir.
It sure is.
Yes, sir.
And, but these people, I feel like many of them would jump out in front of a car for me, and that's an amazing feeling, because these folks, they've been a group that we've cultivated for many, many years,
mm-hmm.
and we are good to them, we're respectful to them, they're very dedicated, they make my job a heck of a lot easier. If I didn't have the quality of people that we have in our organization, I would have some miserable days, because we have a lot of cars that we put out there on the road every day. And fact is, cars break. Whether we have, you know, we can't foresee all of these things. We don't have that crystal ball. And you can imagine, if I didn't have good support people to assist these customers when things happen or when they're needing a car. I couldn't keep up. We'd be a little bitty company.
Wow.
And,
So
we're certainly not massive, but we're we do have 107 dedicated, fantastic, highly trained people, and I'm blessed for sure.
Beautiful, man. That's beautiful. Still talking about this relationship, because the relationships are important. Mm-hmm. We talked about your relationship, the relationship you gain there with your employees. I want to talk about the relationship of a repeat customer.
Yeah.
How do you build a relationship where you get a customer for life and they bring their children to you? What does that look like?
Well, the word you used earlier is a simple word, but can be extremely tough to build, and that's trust. Mm. And trust is something that we earn. And you know, a customer has to take a chance on us the first time. From there, it's up to us to build that trust.
Right.
And but once I can get them to give us a chance, I think we can show them in a short period of time that we're here for them thick or thin. We get the phone calls. You know, I had a customer just last week that they were going on vacation, and they had a nail in the side of their tire in the sidewall. Mm. It's not a repairable thing. We had to order a new tire. This tire that was on this car is a rare tire, evidently, size or make or whatever. And the car was 6 months old. Mm. And they were leaving the next morning for vacation. And this is a customer that's bought many, many cars from us, new cars. This was a new Subaru. And they call in a panic because they're leaving for vacation. We don't have the tire available. The tire was going to be about a week to get.
Wow.
So luckily, we were able to provide them with transportation to go on their vacation.
Wow.
This is a customer that had dealt with us for a long time, but maybe this was a customer, if it had been a customer, it was their first car. What's the likelihood that I have that customer for a long time? It's really good.
Right.
And, you know, so we've got, I've got customers that I know I have personally sold for over 30 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one customer in Lynchburg that I sold when I was at Magic City Ford that still buy cars from
me. Wow.
So and they
says a lot about you.
Well, and
right.
And the customer, you
right.
know, it we
right.
can do everything right on our side, and we're not perfect every time. We make mistakes, but we can do everything right. But if we don't have a customer that sees the value in that,
nice.
then it's just not going to work. But
nice.
It's all about trust, and you have to earn that for sure.
Oh man, I definitely agree. As a business owner myself, and as a purchaser,
yeah.
You know that playing field is much the same. It's a give and take.
Right.
It's a give and take.
Right.
I want to switch gears just a little bit, but in the same vein, relationships. Let's talk about the relationship between the car and the owner.
Yeah.
Right. I know a lot of people, like my daughter, jump in the car, just go.
Just go.
They don't check fluids, tires, brake, antifreeze,
check
nothing, right?
So
just jump in the car and go, right? So I want to drill down on some specifics that you probably can, that you will be able to help us with car maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to explain to our youth and our community about the car, how to take care of a car before it even gets to the shop, before it gets to you.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about what is coolant, first of all. What
yeah.
is coolant, the different types?
So coolant is extremely complex today. I did a radio interview just recently, and I was it was brought to my attention quickly because this radio interview was a live radio interview, and the interviewer was, they had, the listeners could text questions in while we were doing this. Well, the it blew up. I mean, the text just started rolling in when we started talking about
wow.
coolant, because something that I take for granted that I realized quickly that many customers don't realize,
right.
but there's so many different colors of fluid, coolant. And, you know, it used to be, once upon a time, we had green antifreeze, right?
Right.
That's not the case anymore. We've
got
green, we've got blue, we've got orange, we've got yellow.
Yeah.
And those colors do not need to be mixed. Those colors are specific. It's not just because somebody said, well, I like this color, let's make it this color.
Oh, wow.
That's not the case. They're made up of and I'm not a chemist, but they have a chemical difference between these types of coolant. So when you pop your hood and you look at your overflow jug and you see pink fluid and fluid in there, like Volkswagen runs a pink fluid, you definitely do not want to put green fluid in there, even in an emergency. In an emergency, just put water, period. Do not put, do not mix colors with these coolants, because what happens, we see this a lot, but when there's a chemical reaction, it's not like it just starts bubbling up or anything like that, but it will gel. Many of these coolants, when they mix, they'll gel. Well, gelled coolant is not gonna flow through that radiator like it's supposed to. Mm. We need that stuff flowing through. That's what keeps the engine cool. The other thing that will happen was it'll deteriorate. There's a lot of plastic parts. You know, when you think engine, you're thinking, oh, engine's not plastic. No, the engine's not, but there's like the necks for the radiators, the necks for the where thermostat.
When you say neck, you mean like the hose?
Yeah, the hose.
Okay,
the hose, and then the neck that goes into the engine. You know, it can be a plastic neck. Well, those plastic parts will soften, and sometimes just the opposite, crystallize when these fluids mix, and so you definitely don't want to do that. You want to, if you have an emergency and you're low on coolant, maybe you've lost some, put water in it as soon as you can. Then we want to check that for its ability to keep the engine from, or keep that coolant from freezing. You know, we want in the old simple tester that you pick up at the auto parts store, it's got the little balls in it. It works the same no matter what coolant you have in the car. But so if you add water, just be aware before wintertime, we want to be checking that thing to make sure that that it's capable of keeping that engine from freezing.
Okay.
You definitely don't want that.
Okay. Let's talk about tires, right? I noticed that it said minimum tread depth for state inspection. A lot of times, when we get an inspection sticker, and for some of you first-time buyers, you will have to have an inspection sticker. And you got to get it every year. And so, So, or, you know, some people may pay 2 years, something like that. But talk about tires and tread and what that looks like for an inspection.
Sure. So, many people are not aware of this, but you can take a penny, and stick the penny in the tread of the tire, and if there's if you can see clearance between the head of the penny and the edge of the penny, then it's below 2/32. That is 2/32. 2/32 is your minimum for state inspection. A lot of people will stick a penny in the tread of a tire. We have gauges that we use, but a lot of people stick a penny in a tire in the center of the tread, and they're like, oh, my tires are good. It's got to be all the way across, all the way across. So, you know, if your car's out of alignment or something, then that tire's going to wear uneven. And but that 2/32 has got to be all the way across. One of my really good customers, fortunately, he's fine, but Wednesday morning, had an accident on 501 in his Volkswagen Atlas, and he said, I knew I'd let my tires get a little too thin. He said, and he hydroplaned. Luckily, he's okay. Tore his vehicle up really bad, but you know, keeping good treads on our tires is so important, especially when we're getting heavy rains and things like that, obviously in snow and things like that. But the other thing is, you'll see a whole lot less flats when you got all that extra rubber on those tires and you're not running them so low. You know, they're a little more resistant to the cuts and the screws and the nails and things like that. So, but 2/32 is the minimum for state inspection.
Okay.
You know, and speaking of state inspection, John, there was some push a couple years ago. I'm on the Virginia Auto Dealers Association board, and there was some push to do away with Virginia state inspections. Not all states have state inspections, believe it or not. And I went in an uproar, and I couldn't believe that we were gonna be doing away with state inspections, because when I see what some of these cars come in needing, and if we didn't have those customers required to come in and inspect their car. It would be amazing to everybody to see what cars are running up and down the road and what they need. They're dangerous.
Wow.
So state inspections are extremely important.
I didn't think about it like that.
It's a frustrating thing because you're like, yep, I don't have time to run my car in there right now and get that done.
Right.
And it can be frustrating. But when you think about your family running up and down the road, the last thing I want is my family out there on the street riding up and down the road with a tire that's about to pop, a ball joint that's about to break, a steering rod that's going to go at any moment.
Right.
That's the last thing I want. So state inspections are important, extremely important.
Thank you for reminding us of that, man.
It's safe.
Definitely. That was paramount to say too. Thank you.
Yeah.
Batteries.
Yep.
I know for myself, I had 2013 Chevy Malibu, everything's electric, right?
Yeah.
You know, electric. It pulls on the battery a lot.
Pulls a lot.
You know, where you may have had a battery that lasts 5 years, now it lasts three.
Yeah.
You know, so talk a little bit about batteries.
Batteries, to your point, you teed that up perfectly because the electronics that are on these cars today are tenfold to what they were 20 years ago.
Correct.
So the need for a good battery today is more than ever. I'll give you a little example. Subaru has something very unique on their cars, and they have this, what I'm going to call a preheater. I'm not sure what they call it, but normally you get in the average car, you start the engine in the cold winter, and the engine has to come up to temperature before you ever start getting any heat inside that car. Well, Subaru has an electric heater built in, so you start getting heat almost immediately when you start the car. It's not waiting for the engine to heat up. Well, you can imagine the voltage and the amperage that electric heater is pulling on that car.
Correct.
And you take many of our customers, they don't drive much at all, and they go out and they start their new Subaru, and they go to the grocery store that's 2 miles up the road. That battery never really got a chance to charge per se, but you pulled on it really hard because it was wintertime and that electric heater and all the other safety features that are on that car are pulling on it, and it can really work on a battery hard. So we see more challenges with batteries today than ever before, and it's simply because of all the electronics that are on the car. Many battery problems can be detected early. We have testers now that can put a fake draw. It's not a fake draw, it's a real draw, but it's a simulated draw on that battery as if you're really pulling on it with a bunch of stuff.
Okay.
And those testers can show us that, hey, this battery's getting weak. It's still starting the car fine, but it's a matter of time before it's going to leave you stranded. And, many people, they'll run it until it won't start the car one day. But I personally, and many customers, they would like to know that ahead of time, because the last thing they want is to have that happen at the most. And it's never going to happen when it's convenient. It's always going to happen when it's inconvenient.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Talking about maintenance, relationship with the car, I think this, what we're going to talk about now, is one of the most important, and that's oil. Oil changes, filter changes.
Right.
I know for myself, that Malibu I was telling you about has over 300,000 miles
nice.
On the car. However, I changed the oil immediately.
Yeah.
Whenever, I didn't wait to, 5,000-7,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
When it was time to change it, I may go 15,
right,
two tops.
Right.
And I'm changing. That's why it was able to do that. Talk about that type of relationship of changing that oil, man, and those filters.
Obviously, that's the number one thing that we can do to protect our car is changing the oil. Before we talk about intervals, I'll talk about the change that we've seen in product. And that's simply, traditional oil many years ago, we would tear an engine down, and the inside of that engine, if it had a bunch of miles on it, that 300,000 mile car, you would see a lot of buildup of it looked burnt inside because, when we change the oil and you see that oil coming out, it's coming out black, Well, that oil has broken down. But what happened, I'm making this up, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, they started moving into this synthetic blend oil, and they started blending synthetic oil with this traditional oil, and we saw major improvement. And now, all new cars, to my knowledge, have gone to a full synthetic oil. So full synthetic oil, if you ever get it on your fingers, it's like you can't get it off. It you wipe it off and you still feel it. And we see the difference inside of these engines because that oil doesn't break down. When you change that oil now, it's not coming out black, it's coming out brown, not black. And so that oil hasn't broken down. With the turbo engines today, that's extremely important because turbo engines run a little hotter than normal because you're running that oil through that turbo, which gets hot. And it's extremely important to run full synthetic oil in these newer cars. If you've always run traditional oil and you got a higher mileage car, you want to do it a little more often and maybe stick to the oil that you've always used. But the full synthetic oil, obviously it's more expensive, but the benefit is you can go longer in between oil changes.
And that's what I did.
Yes. And I grew up, you changed your oil every 3,000 miles, and that was just what you did, and it was that forever, as long as I can remember. It was 3,000 miles. And then we've come into these synthetic blend oils, and they moved into like the 5,000 mile oil change intervals. And now with full synthetic oil, for example, Volkswagen, they only recommend you change the oil every 10,000 miles.
Right.
That blows my mind.
Right.
But that's based on, that's the warranty. If you do that, then the warranty's maintained and so forth. So it's every 10,000 miles. But it's still amazing to me because after 10,000 miles, you change that oil and it doesn't look burnt.
Wow.
So it's, technology is an amazing thing.
Wow.
And we are paying a little more for that oil change. You know, I'm making these numbers up, but I remember when you could go get your oil change for $40, right? And today, maybe it's 80, 90 to 100.
Yep.
But when you think about, you were paying $40 every 3,000 miles, now we're, you know, Subaru changes oil every 6,000 miles. So maybe we doubled the cost of an oil change. We didn't, but the cost of that oil did. Made it twice. You're going twice as long. It's pretty simple math, but
absolutely,
it makes a lot of sense, and it's a heck of a lot better for your engine. And most of the fluids today, your oils, whether it be gear oils or transmission fluids, they're going to a synthetic oil that or a fluid that is going to last a lot longer, and it's going to protect the car.
Wonderful. That's wonderful, and that's great to know, not only for myself, but of course for the audience.
Yeah.
Brakes.
Yep.
This is something that where you every time you get in the car, you're going to use it.
Oh, yeah.
Speak to this audience about the importance of brakes.
Yeah. Well, it's back to the state inspection. You know, the average customer cannot tell what brake pad they have left. State inspection, just as your tires, 230 seconds is the minimal brake pad life that passes or fails. And but we certainly don't want to get 230 seconds isn't much. We don't want to put our lives and our family's lives in the hands of a 230 second brake pad. But many customers, if we didn't have to do a state inspection, they wouldn't even know that until they start hearing a grinding sound. Once we reach the grinding point, then it gets expensive because now the pad backing, the metal that the pad is attached to, is rubbing against the rotor. So not only do we have to replace the pads, which we were gonna do anyway, now we've torn up our rotors and we gotta put new rotors on, and it gets expensive. So
give us some numbers real quick if that happens.
It's a big range. I've seen, and let's just talk about front brakes to keep it simple, but I've seen front brake pad replacements, just a pad replacement, you know, you could be $150. You get into replacing pads and rotors, and you could simply move that number to $500 real easy, like. And there's some cars, some of your higher end cars, you know, it can cost $1,000 to put a set of brake pads and rotors on the front of a car. But you know, you definitely want to, obviously from a safety perspective, you want to keep an eye on those. And the average customer can't go in and look at those brake pads and see what life is left in them.
So is it, you were speaking about So say we have a teenager or a woman that really doesn't know. Is there an indication that though that they're wearing down? Is so, something you could hear?
Excellent question. Yes. So there's many brake pads, not all, but many brake pads have what we refer to as squealers. Mm. And it's this little metal piece that's in there. And when you start hearing that loud squealing sound, and it's not a brake squeal, it's a unique squeal that you'll hear. That's that indicator starting to touch the rotor and let you know that, hey, your pads are getting low. Not all cars have that. Some of your higher end cars actually have an electronic sensor built in the pad that's hooked into the car, and it turns a light on the dash to tell you that your pads are getting low. Those are the cars that I was explaining are, can be a little more costly because naturally you got a sensor in that pad, right, and it's going to be a little more costly to replace. But it's, and while we're on the brake subject, you know, when you talk about brake squealing, everybody has been challenged with that in the past. And once upon a time, brake pads had asbestos in them. We got away from that many years ago, obviously.
I didn't know that.
And so now we have, for the pad to hold up and last, there's a lot of metallic particles, and I don't know what else is in that pad, but they last a lot longer than they used to, and have better stopping ability for when they get hot. But that dust that comes off of there, and you see black dust on your wheels, that's the dust from those pads. And dust will set up a loud squeal in your brakes. So we recommend a couple simple little things. You know, a lot of people will wash the car in the driveway with just a water hose, and you know, they clean their wheels and car looks great and off they go. But they struggle with this brake squeal, or they live on a dusty road and you've got all that dust up around those pads, and it'll set up a loud squeal for you. We recommend periodically going by a car wash with a high pressure washer. Get that nozzle in between your spokes of your wheels and blow all of that stuff out. Clean those brakes calipers out and get all that dust out of there. Mm. And it'll really doesn't hurt a thing. It's only a benefit because it gets all that dust out of there and gets rid of some of those squeals, those annoying squeals. It can be very frustrating.
Wow.
To get rid of, but it's generally because of brake dust.
Okay.
Is what's putting those noises out.
Y'all hear that, car lovers? You can thank me later. We got you right for the summer. That's a good tip, though. That's a good tip. I'm definitely going to use that. Still talk about relationships with the car. And when you look at the components of a car, they do have a relationship. We're talking about brakes, so brake fluid. Let's talk about brake fluid.
Brake fluid is extremely important today. Unlike once upon a time, obviously, it's always had a level of importance because without brake fluid, you don't have brake stopping ability. But with all the electronics within a brake system now, we have ABS brakes. We've had ABS brakes for quite some time. And for those customers or those listeners that have never experienced what it feels like when the ABS brakes engage, it feels like the whole car is suddenly shaking. Well, what it sensed was you were starting to skid, and we know that by, you know, the old timers like me, we would pump the brakes in our old car to get it to stop. And now this thing does it at a very rapid pace, and it'll stop the car much faster if those ABS brakes engage. Mm-hmm. So, but there are electronic sensors within the system and all these things that have to control that. And because of that, we recommend that you change your brake fluid periodically. And every manufacturer is different. I think Volkswagen and Subaru is around 40,000 miles. They recommend changing that brake fluid out. And because that brake fluid, just like any type of fluid, it'll break down in time. And with all these electronics, you want to protect them because it can get expensive when you start having to replace those sensors. Mm. So you want to change that brake fluid periodically. And
okay.
It's not one of those things we're just trying to sell somebody on If you look in your owner's manual and some of your maintenance booklets, every manufacturer recommends changing that brake fluid. They all have different intervals, but they all recommend changing that fluid. So
okay,
it's important.
Of course, brakes can be scary. They give out. There's something that if this gives out on a car at a particular time, ladies and gentlemen, it can cause you a lot. It starts raining.
Yeah.
And you hit those windshield wipers, and that wiper is broke, man.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's something we don't really think about till we need it.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about windshield wipers, man.
Yeah, they can be frustrating,
right?
Because you get in a car that maybe hasn't had a fresh set of wipers on it. Maybe they've been on there, which doesn't seem like a long time, but a year is a long time for a set of wiper blades.
Right.
Because if you looked at a wiper blade closely, and if that blade was to, when it's new, that blade is standing up straight.
Mm-hmm.
When it's laying on that windshield and it's hot outside and the sun's beating on it, it's rubber, and it starts to lay over like that.
Mm.
And then as it comes across the windshield, it does fine going this way, but when it comes back, it starts bouncing on you,
mm-hmm.
because that blade, it's turned on you. And it's, the rubber gets hard. I mean, it's out in the elements. You want to replace those blades at least once a year, depending on your conditions, maybe even more often than that.
Wow.
So blades are often underrated until we really need them and we wonder why we can't see. A little tip here that I learned many, many years ago. You can, when we're driving down, we don't see any of this stuff coming off, but you've got stuff. Maybe the car in front of you is not running exactly right. You can't see the smoke coming out of the tailpipe, but maybe there's just enough that it's starting to put a film on your windshield that you don't really notice until it rains one night and that wiper is going across and it's not clean and you're like, why can't I see? Well, little tip, you can take alcohol, rubbing alcohol, just the little pads, or you can take some in a bottle and put it on a paper towel. Wipe that blade, because that blade gets a buildup of that oil it's wiping on the windshield, and it gets a buildup on it. Clean that wiper blade with that alcohol pad, and then wipe your whole windshield, because it's got stuff on it too. And if you're the kind of person that likes to wax their car, wax your windshield. You've heard of this product called Rain-X. You know, Rain-X is an amazing thing. I've seen people use that, and there's times you don't even have to use your wipers when maybe if you didn't have that on there, it just beads up like crazy. But I have them wax my windshield because that clean windshield, when those blades are on it, will wipe perfectly.
Good stuff. We talked about buildup on the tires and brakes.
Mm-hmm.
Engine carbon buildup. A lot of people don't know what that is.
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot more of that. And it's not, there was a lot of confusion when we started seeing a lot of carbon buildup, because we started wanting to blame it on the fuels that are coming out of the pumps, and maybe the quality of the fuel. Maybe, you know, we all think, oh, they don't build them like they used to. Well, we started thinking about that, about the fuel. Well, the fact is, the fuels today have a lot of additives in them to help with that. What it is the way that the engines are designed today with fuel injection. So the way, and I don't want to get too deep in the woods here, because I'll confuse everybody, but the way that the fuel enters the intake manifold today is different. It doesn't go in and disperse itself quite like it used to. And that's why we're getting the fuel economy out of these cars that we are today.
Mm.
But as a result, we're seeing a lot more carbon on the top of the pistons and intake valves and so forth, and exhaust valves, that we didn't see before. So many times, most manufacturers are recommending a fuel injection flush. I haven't seen much success with just the stuff that you put in the tank. These machines, when we do a fuel injection flush, the smell that comes out of the exhaust is horrendous, and it's burning, it's eating that carbon out of the engine. So a fuel injection flush or induction system flush is extremely important today with the newer cars, especially because of the way that these intake systems are working. It's not the fuel, it's the way the car is designed, and it takes just a little bit more maintenance than maybe the old ones do. They're lasting longer.
Right, you know. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a very powerful episode. We have Mr. Mark Dalton, General Manager, Terry's Auto Group in Lynchburg. This has been phenomenal. You guys stay tuned for our next episode. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sean.
You can find us on all major podcast platforms. 10 Minutes of Truth with Sean A. Barksdale.
Hitachi Energy is the pioneering technology leader dedicated to advancing the world's energy system to be more sustainable, flexible, and secure.